This Steve Jones Show podcast is now loading. The Steve Jones Show podcast is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, NIL Game Changers, and Sunbury Motor Company. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And the opening half hour of the show today is brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory. I know that. Just bought brand new Ford from Sunbury Motors. Wanted the warranty. They took care of that. Great financing. Terrific buying experience. Pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors guarantee and a great service department that backs it up routine to difficult to handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors, Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Off to Baltimore for the next stop, and that is the Preakness at Pimlico. Dick Girardi joining us on the line. Hello, DJ. How are you?
I'm fine, Steve. You?
I'm doing well. I just want to make sure, are the 7-iron and the putter ready for 2 weeks at Coaches versus Cancer?
Absolutely. I have not practiced since last year, so I am ready.
Perfect. All right. So let's start with who's not there again. And Muth had to be scratched in this. And that's the Bob Baffert horse. I guess he's had a fever and so forth. In reality, how interested are you to eventually see this horse run?
Moose, I mean, look, I've seen him run. I saw him win the Arkansas Derby and crush the Derby winner, Mystic Dan. So, yeah, I know what he's got. Yeah, it would have been nice to see him run tomorrow, for sure. But, yeah, no, he's a talent. There isn't any doubt about that. But the best Baffert three-year-old is a horse called Nisos, who hasn't lost yet, but he's on the sidelines. I don't know when he's coming back. And it's nice to have a deep bench, right? So he's got imagination in the race tomorrow. He could win. It felt like the backup couldn't win. So Bob has deep reserves.
Yeah, he has deep reserves. Now, Mystic Dan, this is obviously a 16th shorter, but I always know that you like to look at the next 100 yards at the finish line to see how the horse is. The horse was obviously leaking oil down the stretch. What's your thought on Mystic Dan?
Steve, I think with the scratch of Muth, it gives him a real chance. I don't think he was going to beat Muth. I just think Muth is just a different class at this moment. But everybody's going to look at the Derby and they're going to go, all right, as you said, he was leaking oil. He got the dream run along the rail. You know, that can't possibly happen again. Well, actually, it can. The three horses to his inside have no speed. I think he's going to go take an immediate left turn with Brian Hernandez, be on the rail again. He loves to run inside horses. Mm-hmm. I think the worst he is coming out of the first turn is third.
Yep.
And possibly he could even be in front, depending on other tactics and what other riders do. And I actually talked to Kenny McPeak, the trainer, about that yesterday, and he wasn't opposed to that. So I think he's got a realistic chance to win again. The problem is he was 18-1 2 weeks ago, and you're getting 2-1 now, which is not all that appetizing. But, yeah, I think he's okay. And his one race, it looks like we're probably going to get it off track. His one race in the mud was awesome. He won by 8 lengths in the Southwest Stakes at Oakland Park. So I think he's okay. And he was kind of reasonably close to the pace in the Derby. And all the pace horses backed out except Mystic Dan. And the horses that ran 2, 3, 4 were like 15th, 17th, 19th. So the flow of the race favored horses coming from the back. He was the only one near the front that survived. So I actually think he's a little better than people think. So yeah, he would be my pick, but I don't have nearly the confidence I would have if Moose was in the race. I think Moose would just crush the field.
Exactly. And, of course, there's less traffic with this. Does that benefit? Now, look, he negotiated and got to the front in the Kentucky Derby and let everybody else fight the traffic. But there's less traffic here. How much does that help him?
I think it does. I mean, look, everything went right in Kentucky. That doesn't often happen in that field, as you know. You don't get through everywhere. You had to squeeze through a small opening at the top of the stretch. But I think it does help because the chances of getting in any trouble are much less, obviously, when you have eight horses versus 20, the math thing. But he also has enough speed, Steve, where he's going to have some of the deep closers pretty far behind him. Some of whom are you know, certainly Catching Freedom and finished fourth in the Derby. He's a contender, but he's at some point he's going to have to run by Mystic Dan. He couldn't do it in the Derby with the same trip, and now we're going 110 yards shorter, so I don't know why he would do it this time. Of the new players, obviously imagination is a factor for Baffert. Tuscan Gold for Chad Brown is definitely a factor. He's okay. And in Breath South, Chad Brown has won the Preakness twice since 2017 with a horse with almost identical form. I think those are really the four that have the most chance. And we have a local park source, Uncle Heavy, who I will be interested in because Mark Reed, who you met years ago up at Parks, so when we went over to Dr. Billy's farm after the races, he bred Uncle Heavy. His brother Butch trains the horse. He sold him to a friend of his, Mike Milam. And the horse is named after Mark. He was a rather big guy. And his nickname at the racetrack, he's a former trainer, was Heavy. So all his nieces and nephews refer to him as Uncle Heavy. And he that just happened to be in 1972, as the University of Maryland grad. In 1972, ACC heavyweight wrestling champion, and he is a PA bred based at Parks. It's the toughest spot of his career. He's got a shot, third, and probably be, if they said right now, I said, you're third, they go, we'll take it. But he'll be coming late. Now, whether it's likely to be too late, but if you hear the words Uncle Heavy is rolling down the center of the track, it could be chaos with the Reeds and company at Baltimore.
That'd be something else. It really would be. That would be something else.
20 years since Smarty Jones. Be the first PA bred since the great Smarty Jones to win the Preakness.
Exactly. All right. So, of these horses in here, you mentioned several that have a shot. I'll bring out Tuscan Gold. What does Tuscan Gold bring to the table?
Yeah, I mean, he's lightly raced, ran a good third in the Louisiana Derby, could have tried to get to the Kentucky Derby, but Chad Brown said, and he's done this a couple of times, Steve, in recent years, said, you know what, I'm going to try to point this horse to the Preakness. Did the same thing with Cloud Computing, same thing with Early Voting 2 years ago. They both won. Blazing Sevens last year almost beat National Treasure, so he's got a real beat on how you run on the Preakness, and he's obviously one of the great trainers we have. It's just unclear how good he is. He's only run three times. If you said who's got the best breeding in the race, I'd say Tuscan Gold. I mean, he's by a great sire out of a mare that's by Curlin. So he's got all that going for him. It's just a question of what is his ceiling, and is he going to be good enough to beat these kind of horses? And the answer is it very possibly.
And then there is, in this race, Catching Freedom. What do you like about Catching Freedom? What concerns you about Catching Freedom?
I'm not sure the trainer really wants to run in the race. He didn't sound all that enthusiastic after he finished fourth. He doesn't usually run horses back in 2 weeks. What I like is he's very consistent, Steve. He's never run a bad race. Fourth in the Derby, won Louisiana Derby, third in the Risen Star behind Sierra Leone. So he's been in with the good horses and run well. He basically had the same trip that Mystic Dan had at the Derby, followed him all the way through with Flavian Pratt, and couldn't catch him then. I don't know why you would catch him this time, but he's certainly a contender. I mean, the four horses are going to get the most money are Catching Freedom, Mystic Dan, Tuscan Gold, and Imagination. And if they finish 1, 2, 3, 4, nobody's going to be surprised. Of the long shots, I don't like either of the Lucas horses, Seize the Gray or Just Steel. In fact, I think Seize the Gray has a chance with Mugatu of finishing last. Uncle Heavy of the long shots would be the one I think has the best chances. Maybe, you know, if you're looking for a long shot, the trifecta or something, he'd be the one maybe used for third.
You mentioned with Mystic Dam about how he ran well in the slop one other time.
He did.
Any other horses here that have any kind of track record in the slop that's noteworthy?
Yeah, the great Uncle Evie. He won. You remember the race we were watching on the plane?
Yeah, that's right.
In Indiana, when he got up at the last jump in the Withers at Aqueduct, that was an and he won a race at Parks on a good track back in right after Christmas. Yeah, and not many of the other horses have any kind of form or no form in mud. So yeah. You'd be guessing with the rest of them, but yeah, for sure, the favorite does, and Uncle Heavy does.
Okay, just in case people are wondering, sometimes what we do in the plane, we will watch.
Yes. That's right. We're getting ready to taxi for takeoff out of Monroe County Airport near Bloomington.
Hey, yeah, and Penn State won. We already did our job for the day. We're good.
That's right. Hey, they crushed it, and we got Uncle Heavy up on the last jump.
36 horses have won the Derby and Preakness combo. So let's get to the Pick'em part, because I know you have another one coming up here shortly. In the Pick'em part of it, Mystic Dan become 37, and how do you box it?
I'd like Mystic Dan, and then I'll probably play Tuscan Gold and Imagination. I think Imagination may be loose on the lead. Tuscan Gold, we talked about, is the improving horse. So see if I can keep catching Freedom out of the trifecta. So some combination of 5-8-9, 5-9-8, something like that. And with a little Uncle Heavy sprinkled in at the bottom of all of that.
Of course you have to get Uncle Heavy sprinkled in somewhere.
Yeah, of course.
Come on.
We got to
do it.
DJ, come on.
DJ, you're the best. Thanks, Ben. I appreciate it so much.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Steve.
Dick Girardi. Meanwhile, back in the corner office, marking down all these picks. Guess who?
The suit.
He's getting a lot of blowback from his appearance yesterday. By the way,
as much blowback as Scotty Scheffler? No.
I'll tell you right now. That's a mess.
Yes.
That is a mess. There's nobody in this that looks good. Nobody looks good in this.
No.
Scheffler, for obvious reasons. I mean, nobody wants a mugshot. Right? Two, PGA doesn't look good because he's their top player. But help him out a little bit here. Okay? The accident is, the tragedy is down the road. So it's not like he had to go around it to get there. Right? And the Louisville police don't look good. Nobody looks good in this.
That's one of those things I looked at. I'm up pretty early because I have to get my daughter off to school, and I looked at it and I was like, what in the world would Scotty Scheffler be doing at 6:30 in the morning that he got arrested? And then it just kept coming, and that has to be one of the stranger days in golf history, I would guess.
It's unbelievable, right? I mean, you know, he had an earlier tee time. Because he's in the first grouping going off. You know, he's in one of the first groups going off today. So he's going to go over. He's going to just get a little quick workout in. And then he was going to go out, hit some balls, and then go play. And nobody looks good in this.
No.
Now, he's out there playing pretty well right now. It's not like he's out there. If he's rattled in any way, he hasn't shown it. Because I believe he's at 6 under par right now, something like that. He's right in the thick of what's going on here. I think he's in the top 10. He is, ding, 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 ding. Where are we? He is 6th. 6 under par. He started out birdie, bogey, birdie, then pars, birdied his ninth hole, which was 18. Then he's parred one. Now he's playing two. Now the front nine, which he's playing on right now, is played harder than the back nine. But he's 6 under par, he's 3 shots back. What the heck?
That might that might be the most impressive part, because you would think you're either mad at yourself for doing something dumb, or you're mad at the cops for getting arrested, or, you know, you've got to have some sort of emotion, but to be able to compartmentalize that and still be able to play well today is pretty impressive.
I mean, you know, and I guess that the police officer, Detective Gillis, I believe, is who was, grabbed onto the side of the car. Now, the car is not going fast, but Brian Gillis, the detective, was directing traffic at Shelbyville Road near Gate 1 of Valhalla, which is the gate, I guess, Scheffler has to go in. And the report said that Brian Gillis was standing in the middle of the westbound lanes when Scheffler's SUV pulled into the lanes to avoid the traffic backup. It said Gillis was wearing a full police uniform with a highly visible yellow reflective rain jacket. Okay. Gillis stopped Scheffler's SUV and attempted to give instructions, according to the report. They said that the subject refused to comply, the subject being Scheffler, and accelerated forward, dragging Gillis to the ground. Now, Gillis ended up going to the hospital. They said that his uniform pants were also damaged beyond repair. So, Scheffler now faces charges of second-degree assault of a police officer, and that's a felony. Third-degree criminal mischief, reckless driving, and disregarding traffic signals from an officer directing traffic. Okay? Again, the assault charge is the felony. The others are misdemeanors. So he has an arraignment now set for 9 o'clock next Tuesday morning. Scheffler was released on his own recognizance at 8:40 in the morning. He got to Valhalla less than an hour before he was scheduled to tee off. Now, Scheffler's version is, he says, look, I was proceeding as directed by police officers. It was a very chaotic situation, understandably so, considering the tragic accident. Again, what caused all of this is an incredible tragedy. They had a shuttle bus. I don't know whether they were taking fans, media, whatever, or may have been emptied at the time. I don't know. And it struck a man in the crosswalk. And it killed him. So that's the tragedy beyond tragedy here. It was a very chaotic situation, understandably so, considering the tragic accident that had occurred earlier, and there was a big misunderstanding of what I thought I was being asked to do. I never intended to disregard any of the instructions. I'm hopeful to put this to the side and focus on golf today. Of course, all of us involved in the tournament express our deepest sympathies to the family of the man who passed away in the earlier accident this morning. It truly puts everything in perspective. Now, Jeff Darlington of ESPN was following all this. He witnessed it. He said Scheffler was trying to drive around the crash scene. At one point, according to Darlington, Gillis attached himself to the side of Scheffler's car. Scheffler stopped his car as he turned into the entrance of Valhalla. After about 20 to 30 seconds, Scheffler rolled down his window to talk to the officer. The officer grabbed Scheffler's arm to pull him out of the vehicle, according to Darlington. The officer reached inside the vehicle, opened the door, and once Scheffler was pulled out, he pushed him against the car and put him in handcuffs. Darlington was standing at the entrance when Scheffler was detained. Darlington said Scheffler turned to him and said, "Can you help?" According to Darlington, an officer instructed him to back away, probably because he thought he was part of Scheffler's entourage. This, of course, assuming they know who he was, which is another big issue. Scheffler's attorney, Stephen Romines, told ESPN that the golfer attempted to enter Valhalla as he had been instructed to earlier, unaware that there had been a fatal wreck just up the road. Romines says he was going to Valhalla to work out. He was getting ready for his tee time. They were directing traffic. He held his credential out and was going in like they'd been instructed to. Apparently, there had been a traffic accident, maybe even a fatality down the road, and that changed the traffic patterns, and he was unaware of that. Romine, speaking outside the Louisville Metro Police Department of Corrections, said the officer who attempted to stop Scheffler wasn't part of the regular traffic detail at Valhalla. So that's where the miscommunication arose. So they are allowed to go through. That's why they have the credential and the way through. He was unaware there had been a wreck, and he proceeded like they'd been instructed to. He did exactly what the instructions told him to do to enter the premises. Roman says Scheffler is going to fully cooperate with police and will deal with it as it progresses. Well, there's one way to put it. What a mess. Wow. What a mess. Okay. So that's at least everything we have. We'll take a break. What, Ben Jones next half hour, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. We'll talk about Beaver Stadium as we continue here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
There's something to be said about a sale with a handshake. A service technician who really knows what he's doing, they can explain it in English what the problem is. There's nothing better than having that friend you could trust in the area. That's Sunbury Motors, where you get selection, knowledgeable salespeople, and prices that fit your budget, and more important, that friend you can trust. Welcome to Sunbury Motors, Kia, Ford, and Hyundai. You could shop other dealers and compare prices, but at Sunbury Motors, you get their lowest price promise. They research the current used vehicle market and guarantee their used car prices are the lowest. If you find a lower price, Sunbury Motors will beat it. Three dealers all in one. See their full new and pre-owned inventory at sunburymotors.com. Pick out a vehicle you like and schedule your test drive online. Follow them on Facebook. Sunbury Motors Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
You want your young athlete to get the most out of life and NIL. You need a roadmap, a strategic approach. NIL Game Changers help student athletes earn what they learn in their collegiate journey. Driven by former student athletes and coaches who work as NIL sports agents and content media designers, they'll guide both student and family, starting with high school students looking toward college and those already in college. Get a seasoned team of marketing experts with a background in athletics and coaching. Visit NILGameChangers.org, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities.
Bringing you an in-depth look at Penn State sports and more. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. The Steve Jones Show is presented by Sunbury Motor Company, Purdy Insurance, Brewers Outlet, and NIL Game Changers. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And NIL Game Changers, this sponsor in the half hour. Ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness opportunities for both athletes and businesses. Go to NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today. And we are in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. And do we have Ben, or are we waiting on Ben?
We have Ben.
We have Ben. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, joins us. Ben, it's always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Hey, Steve, thanks for having me. It was good to be here.
So the big story coming up will be the appropriation, or at least the thumbs up to it, for Beaver Stadium. What the vote ends up being, we don't know, but it's expected to go through. So what do you know about really what is in this proposal that they have put before them? Because they already have the $70 million to get other elements started.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's really the big question right now, is sort of the what is next part. And Penn State has done a much to, I think, everyone's chagrin, a little bit, a good job of keeping a lot of the specifics under wraps. I think we will maybe get a better idea of what is next on Tuesday. But I think broadly, you know, we know a lot of the projects that have already been underway, which is winterization. They are adding a super ribbon scoreboard, which I have a pretty good idea of what that's going to look like, but not enough confirmed to say it out loud. But effectively, a very large scoreboard addition in the south end zone. refabbing some of the LED instrumentation, if you will, in that scoreboard as well. Some things like that, some circulation things. But generally, yes, I mean, this is about getting the rest of the money or more of the money approved to move forward with some of the construction. The plan right now is no one would be displaced for this upcoming football season. That will probably change in the future between the conclusion of this upcoming football season and the completion of the renovations in tentatively 2027. But some of the specifics, we will still learn that, but certainly it seems like things are about to be undergoing, you know, even more change to Beaver Stadium over the next couple of years.
Yeah, 25 and 26 would be the years that, you know, with the idea they want this finished by August of 27, correct?
Yes, that is the plan, that the 2027 season would be the first under a new-look Beaver Stadium. I forget who exactly. I think it might be Syracuse would be that first game. You know, I try and take it one day at a time, let alone several years at a time, but it will be a big moment, much like when Penn State played, I believe it was Miami, that first game after the expansion.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it was, as a matter of fact. So when you look at where everybody is across the country nationally and what they've done with their facilities, I've always had a feeling that this is just on my side, and part of it's also the background of my family, that your investment should match your expectations. Does this fall under that category in your mind?
I think so, and I think that, you know, James Franklin has said it, and I think, you know, that he's right, that if you want to be a major player in college football, which Penn State has obviously been, that you have to put your money where your mouth is, that the day and age of certainly some of the things that Penn State was very good at, which was not necessarily being about all the bells and whistles and everything and still finding ways to win and be successful, that those days are by and large gone. And I think that the things that they are doing to Beaver Stadium, some of them are practical, some of them are a product of the building is old. It's got a lot of its guts hanging out in the wind, and that does things to a stadium after a while that need to be done. And some of it, you know, when you talk about some of the plans they've sort of whispered about or sort of floated, the idea of nicer suites, the idea of different sorts of things throughout the stadium, you know, that's about fan experience, that's about expectations. And there's no question that if you say, look, we're going to spend $700 million renovating the stadium, and not all of that is essential, that is a statement about the expectations that you have for your football program and the expectations that you have about what it's going to take to invest in that football program. And I think with the playoffs expanding, with conferences changing, and certainly neither of us know what college football is going to look like in 10 years, but it almost certainly will be even different than it is now in one way or another, that, you know, this is the time where you go, you've got to invest, and you can't really you really can't half, you know, what it if you want to be good at it.
Yeah, and that's a part of it. There's also another element that has now crept into this, and that is something that no athletic director in their 3 to 5 year budget projection 4 months ago could have ever had, and that is the possibility of a $20 million fee every year that would be distributed to student-athletes as part of what could be a settlement in the House case. Can Beaver Stadium be a revenue generator outside of football to not supplement all of it, but at least some of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, certainly we have seen historically that Penn State football obviously has basically been the bread and butter of where athletics gets its money to run the show. And I think that if you look at even from outside of football, where, you know, we saw the Luke Combs concert, we've seen some other things, and I think that Pat Kraft is, and frankly probably any athletic director at this particular juncture, goes, look, we've got a really big building, we can put a lot of people in, if we can make it really nice, if we can make it nicer, if we can make it utilized in different times of the year, I mean, it's going to be how many years in the making at this point when Penn State finally is in a position to hold a winter classic at Beaver Stadium. You know, I look forward to not having to ask that question at least once a year to see where things are at with that game. You know, there are so many things that you go, you've got to be able to use that building not only for football, but for other things as well, and that comes with renovations, that comes with winterization. And certainly, you know, Penn State's been really lucky that, you know, nationally attendance has been up and down and all over the place, and by and large, the easier it is for you to watch a game at home, the less likely you are to necessarily go to that game. And I think, you know, if you invest in fans coming to Beaver Stadium, they will continue to do that. Certainly, there's no reason to think that Penn State fans are going to stop coming to Penn State football games. But I think at the same time, the moment that you take any fan base for granted is when you start to lose them. And these investments are as much about keeping them there as anything else. And at the end of the day, you're right. You know, you've got to be able to make money to spend it. And certainly Penn State, like every major college football athletic program, is spending money, you know, left and right, both necessarily and otherwise.
You mentioned the Winter Classic, and you were obviously covering the Rose Bowl, but Minnesota at Target Field hosted it, I think, a year ago. And did you get any feedback from the people there on what it was like? Because I know looking out from my hotel room, like a month later, I could still see the outline of the hockey rink there.
Yeah, I mean, that's the challenge, is you've got to be, you know, I think my understanding, and certainly a lot of things have changed about Penn State over the years, that, you know, one of the challenges of hosting something like the Winter Classic is that you've got to give up the reins to your building a little bit. You've got to let the NHL come in, you know, 6-8 months in advance and say, this is what we're going to do, and this is what we're going to do to your field, and this is what you're going to do to your stadium. And it takes a little bit of bravery to give that thing away to somebody else. Certainly there are logistical things, you know, about the fact that Penn State's field is grass. It doesn't necessarily have the ability to just be plopped back in like we've seen some of these bowl games and stadiums where, you know, by the time you're leaving, they've already, you know, air blasted the paint off and they're putting the Cowboys logo back on, sort of thing. It's a little bit different with grass. It's a little bit different with a stadium like that. But, yeah, no, it's definitely a challenge and one of those things where you've got to be brave enough to give it up. And I think that Minnesota is a good example of, like a lot of these major cities where you go, well, we'll just play it over there instead. But, yeah, I mean, there are definitely long-term repercussions for things like putting an entire sheet of ice in the middle of your grass field.
How important is it for Penn State to have people understand that bathrooms, concessions, concourses, egress, these are all for the fans? Have they done a good enough job of explaining to people that a lot of this is for their ease and comfort?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the great challenge in all of this for Pat Kraft and really Penn State at large, I think, over the next couple of years, is to get everybody on the same page about what's happening and why, because there is going to be a moment here where they're going to have to tell people, look, you've sat here and you're not going to be able to next year because we're putting scaffolding there, or, you know, we've already, you know, there are things about parking because of the inflated air-supported practice structure, which is a completely different project, that are going to displace people. And you've got to be able to say, look, I know that this kind of sucks, but this is why we're doing it. This is how we're going to make it better for you in the future, make you whole in the future, and kind of take everybody on this journey together. Because I think, you know, from a fundraising perspective, and obviously $700 million is going to come from a lot of different places, and probably none of it is going to be from you or me, or certainly not enough to make a dent in it, that, you know, you've got to keep people happy. You've got to make sure that they understand what's going on and why. And, you know, can you make everybody happy? I think we've learned in this day and age that there's always going to be somebody who's grumpy because that's what they like to do. But I think that, you know, you've got to be able to translate your mission. And certainly there's no question that at the end of the day, a lot of this is for the football program, but a lot of it is for the people in the seats. And, you know, if everybody understands both sides of that coin, you know, I think they can get through this project relatively unscathed.
Anything, what do you want to know about the project as they get ready to present it? What are a couple things you would like to know?
Yeah, I mean, I think just, it's always easier for people to get excited about things when they see pictures of it. You know, I think that, you know, I'm one of those people because it's my job that I wake up in the morning and I check the OPP website and see what sorts of bids are out there. And they say things like deep foundations and concrete, and I can picture those in my mind, but I can't really tell you what that means for the stadium. So I think, you know, the more that you understand what the vision is, I think the easier it is to translate to people. So I'd love to see some, you know, some pictures, but, you know, I remember however long it was that, you know, that Sandy Barber had that presentation of Beaver Stadium renderings, and certainly there's a balance between this is what's actually going to happen and here's a nice idea of what it might look like. So, yeah, I mean, I think visualizations would be big for me, just to be able to kind of picture what things are going to look like in the future. But obviously, you know, designs, architecture, it's a fluid thing, especially in this stage. So you've got to kind of be prepared for stuff to change. But, yeah, I mean, I think seeing words turn into images would be the sort of thing, at least for me, I'm a visual learner, Steve. It would be a plus.
Sure. Right, exactly. No, everybody does it in various ways. If you put out renderings, now you feel like something's coming to life, right? Because now you at least have an idea what it's, quote, going to look like. I mean, that's, I think a lot of people feel that way about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like, you know, when they started to get things underway with Pagula Ice Arena, that you got to watch that little fly through of a bunch of two-dimensional Penn State fans being very excited about goals and things like that. I think it's big because it's a big project. You know, it's a big, you know, really moment for Penn State athletics at large, that you go, we're going to change this really for the first time. Obviously, you know, the suites being added, and I guess it was 2001 was when that all finished up, is not exactly a million years ago. But, you know, when you think about Beaver Stadium being the traditional historic place that it is, when you're going to make almost $1 billion worth of changes to it, people want to be able to say, at least I know what it's going to look like when it's done. And I think that the days like Tuesday, hopefully, certainly, you know, can be a day where people start to have a better sense of that vision.
What is it like for you as a reporter in this era, covering a sport with NIL, covering a sport with the transfer portal, covering a sport where House versus the NCAA and the possibility of a settlement there? What's it like on your part covering this?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting. It's exciting in a lot of ways because so much is changing. You know, a couple hours ago, the new, it's not called NCAA football anymore, but the College Football 25 trailer finally came out. You know, it's exciting to see these student athletes have opportunities to sort of be out in the public eye in different ways and be branded in different ways. You know, I think it's fun, and I think that, you know, in a lot of ways, it's like covering, you know, professional sports, or at least what I perceive that might be like, having not done it myself. But, you know, I think it is representative of really how much money is in it, how many eyeballs are on it, and how much the world is changing. And I think, you know, everyone that watches college football, loves college football or college athletics, and I think it's good for the sport in the long run to be in the place that it's in. And certainly there are a lot of changes and exciting things, and some of them will be good and some of them will be bad. But I think change can be good, and I think college football is certainly going to continue to be different as we move along. But different is exciting, and people care about exciting. And, you know, as someone who talks about it all the time, exciting sure beats boring.
Yeah, no question. And exciting, at least let's say different, we'll find out what your opinion is on exciting. Adding the four West Coast schools to the Big Ten, I know, brings with it logistical problems and an idea of, like, this is really the Big Ten. But how do you view having those four in? Does that add to the excitement of the Big Ten? Does it add to the excitement of the job? Or is there another answer?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's exciting. You know, I think the idea that, you know, you can go to USC, and that's a regular season game. Obviously not every year, but certainly on a regular basis, that beats, you know, I don't want to disparage West Lafayette, but it's a different experience than Los Angeles. You know, I think that everyone can look at that and go, well, this is entertaining. And I think from the big picture perspective, if you're the Big Ten, you know, I think that for as odd as it still feels and probably will feel for a while to say, you know, Seattle, a Big Ten city, that, you know, the Big Ten got ahead of certain things, because what would suck a whole lot more is if the Big Ten missed out on some of these interesting brands.
Yes.
And was stuck with adding Akron or adding some school that really doesn't bring the cachet. I think that in the long run, you know, it positions Penn State to continue to be in a conference of relevance. It continues to position itself to be in a place where it's going to continue to bring in a lot of money from media rights deals. So I think there are a lot of challenges for Penn State to come from this, because it's not like any of these schools are going to be, you know, knocked over and run through by Big Ten teams. But at the same time, I think it makes the Big Ten more interesting, more exciting. And, you know, in the long run, it's just about, can you make it to next year and continue to be relevant in college football as it changes? And certainly Penn State and the Big Ten are positioned as well as anybody in that regard.
Yeah, no, appreciate that. That's a terrific answer. Thanks so much, Ben. Really appreciate it. And we'll talk after they take the vote.
All right. Sounds good, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thanks. You bet. Ben Jones, statecollege.com, always doing a great job. All right, we'll come back more in a moment. This half hour being brought to you by NIL Game Changers, the ultimate destination for name, image, and likeness. Whether you're an athlete or a business, they can help you. Go to NILGameChangers.org to start your journey today here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Spring has sprung, and it's time to dust off those insurance policies. For over 100 years, the Purdy Insurance Agency has been protecting families and businesses of the greater Susquehanna Valley and beyond. With the experience of our trained and knowledgeable staff, you can rest assured that your needs will be evaluated and met by some of the industry's best representatives. No matter what your insurance needs are, call Purdy Insurance today at 570-286-5855 or visit our website at purdyinsurance.com to see what we can do for you.
Party time, game time, or just fun time. Doesn't matter what time it is, because it's Brewers Outlet time. The Beverage Supermarket has the area's largest beer selection. Imports, microbrews, ciders, and domestics. Pick from over 100 ice-cold 12-packs and dozens of 24-ounce singles. Soda, snacks, hot sauces, fresh roasted peanuts. Make it one-stop party shopping, and don't forget the pickle bar. So whatever you're celebrating or just doing it up, Brewers Outlet, Reagan Street, Sunbury, wants to see you. And thank you for your years of patronage.
So I guess Penn State gets a note from the suit. He says, I just want to know what my seat looks like. I'm like, it's not how it works. Is that the only question you had? What's my seat look like? Jeez.
I just assume he stands behind you two, you and Jack.
No, that's why we have security.
Are you guys have the restraining order too?
Everybody does. Okay, it's really, you name it, we got it. We're just like everybody else. Yeah. Well, we just, you know, just want to know. It's intriguing because, look, the stadium is going into its 65th season. At some point, you have to do something with it. Now, do I wish this had been done in 2017 when it first came out? Yeah, I mean, probably would have been 40% cheaper than now. But you know what? It's at least they're going to do something, which is great. And I'm looking forward to seeing what all the renderings look like and so forth. Now, I'm not saying they're doing that on Tuesday, but I know they have some stuff done, and I'm looking forward to it.